to you by Satanic International Network. You're listening to the news.
Upon decaying every foul wicked spirit in the host, the news.
20 minutes, Zagarude, on the news, spread out.
On the news, it's gonna fucking rock. Be there.
The whole point.
To really tap into have a serial current
necessitates a certain fortitude.
Now onto our show.
All right, it's Tuesday night. It is 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 9 p.m. Central Standard Time, and you are listening to the Ooze Illuminous Edition. This is your host, Jason Sorrell, and tonight we're going to be talking about the Occupy Wall Street movement, and in particular, Occupy Austin. So if you're interested in calling in, the call-in number is 347-989-1371, or of course also be watching the chat room. So if you're in the chat room and want to go ahead and drop a line, if I can catch it fast enough, I'll try to make sure that I make mention of it on the air. The Luminous Edition is a little bit different than the other shows we do. Normally go through topics rapidly. Tonight, though, I think I'm going to dedicate the whole hour to the Occupy Austin and Occupy Wall Street movements. They're big news right now. And 2 or 3 weeks ago, the Occupy Wall Street movement was considered kind of a joke. It was being ignored by the major news media. A bunch of people congregating there in a park in New York City. And which has become known as, I think, Liberty Park or Liberty Square now. The idea was that they wanted to call attention to themselves and express to the world their disdain with corporate influence in the political system here in the United States. Their basic premise is that corporations should not be considered entities and given the same rights as other citizens here in the U.S., especially in our politics. That corporate money has too much influence on our politicians and political system. This is, you know, the idea. Let's say you go to visit your congressman. Let's say you take a trip to D.C. and you make your way, you know, to their office, and you'll find yourself waiting amongst a group of people, 10, 11, 12 people, depending on the day, and you know what's going on. And you want to speak to your congressman about whatever. After all, he is your congressman, so you do have that right to go to D.C. You go to where he's at. And to speak with your congressman if that's something you choose to do. At issue, though, is, and this is the experience that has been related to me by a number of people who have actually undertaken this journey, to see their congressman, to speak with congressman directly, is that, of course, you'll be put in line. You'll be waiting with a number of people who have come to speak with their congressman. And somebody else will walk in. And the difference between him and you is when your congressman's people are processing you to find out who's going to be speaking to him today or who's going to be speaking to him the next 15 minutes, you're just coming to him as a constituent, as a member of his particular voting district, and you have whatever issue you want to discuss with him, whatever idea you want to bring to his attention. The person who just showed up, he has ideas and concerns of people that he represents. And he has in his pocket a check for $50,000 with which he's going to donate to that person's campaign. He is a lobbyist for a special interest, and he wants your congressman's attention and vote. So this is the concern of the Occupy Wall Street movement, that the financial institutions, the corporations are given far too much deference and are far too influential in our political system. Now, that premise in and of itself, I totally agree with, that no one person, no one entity, no one particular organization should have that much weight, should have that much say in what goes on in politics. And some of the arguments they make, I mean, are very sound. When you consider the situation with the auto industry, a number of different automobile companies were too big to fail, that if these companies failed, it meant economic collapse. For some reason, it meant economic collapse if GM, let's say, would would go under. It meant the whole United States was going to go under. Now, a bunch of economics people pointed out that, no, that's not the case. If one company fails, I mean, that's the natural progress of things, that if a business fails, if a business model is not successful, companies go under all the time. So if GM were to fail, yes, it would mean that this particular segment of auto workers would have trouble finding a job for a little while. But what would happen is that other, more efficient, better auto companies would have stepped in to fill the void. A number of smaller companies would have came along and started manufacturing automobiles, automobiles maybe that were made of lighter materials, automobiles that may have been designed for, you know, for greater safety, automobiles that may have even, you know, been more green than what GM normally puts out. But for whatever reason, and well, the reason being that GM has for a long time held great sway in our government felt that they were too big to fail. Same with the banks, the banking process. That these different banks, these different institutions, when it became clear that the mortgages and homes, properties that they were forced to provide loans on, when it became clear that these things could not be substantiated, that they are insoluble, these banks found themselves in trouble. A major portion of their investments were rolled up in this kind of commodity, along with other poor choices, including, you know, investing in companies like GM and things like that, companies which were too big to fail. You know, guaranteed investments. So when these banks started having trouble, when they started struggling, of course, the government had to step in to bolster the banking system. And it was like putting a Band-Aid on cancer, basically, in my opinion. It's that kind of wound in our system that it did nothing but perpetuate this thing limping along for another decade or two, maybe. But eventually this economic system is going to collapse. As it should, as part of a natural process. Something has its run, it's successful a while, but eventually it breaks down. And this is where we see ourselves with our system today. The Occupy Wall Street people are pointing to that symptom, pointing to that situation, that corporations and banks and everything else, they have too much influence, they have too much power. They argue that if these banks can be bailed out, if these companies can be bailed out, well, what about these homeowners? What about these individual homeowners? Is the American people, are the American people not themselves too big to fail? Now, my argument would be, you know, in fact, no, that the American people, they are not too big to fail. That homeowners, if they can't afford to, you know, have their homes, well, they should have their homes foreclosed upon. And they should be, you know, whoever owns the property then, the banks, whatever, should take it over. The problem with that is that because of the bad loan rules, the bad loan regulations, the insistence of our government, our federal government, that banks give loans to people who have poor credit, who have no way they're going to pay off these loans, you know, building new homes and everything else for these people and giving these homes to these people, well, that means that the banks taking that property is not going to help the banks. It's property they didn't want in the first place. So it just means that they sit there with a house on their hands and they can't do anything with it. You know, you'd be better off letting these people actually just live in these houses and not pay a damn thing and ride it off. I'm going to come back to that point in a little while. But the Occupy movement, so this is their core purpose, is to call attention to how much corporate money is involved in politics and how hypocritical it is for the government to, first of all, bail out these corporations, and then to accept money from these corporations for political influence, for political power. Now, the people that have organized the different Occupy movements, they have a definite political philosophy. There's a definite political ideology there. And the phone number, again, is 347-989-1371 if you want to call in to discuss this. The ideology is that democracy is what works. The people being given a voice is what will work. This is key, I think, to the way they express themselves. When you go down to the Occupy movements, and they have all kinds of movements going on, Occupy Boston, Occupy Dallas, Occupy Fort Worth, I think there's some in California, I think they're starting something in Chicago. They're all over the place. And here we have Occupy Austin, started October 6th, here 2011, just last Thursday. The core principle, again, is the same. to get corporate influence out of the political system. But then what they also want to do is they want to demonstrate how the people's democracy can succeed, how a bunch of people coming together can use a political system, an artificial system, to manage themselves, to make choices about what they will do, and to have some success, to have some impact without any corporate money, without any corporate funding. So what they do is, first of all, it's a democratic process, and one of the requirements is that if you're a participant in this democratic process, if you recognize that you are one of the people and you choose to speak your voice in one of these forums, you have to understand that the thing that holds you all together is the idea of solidarity, that no matter what, you have to stand as one, regardless of your differences, regardless of your different political ideals, regardless of what's motivating you to be there, you have to stand as one, otherwise the corporate fat cats win. The 99%, this is how they label themselves, the people who don't have the wealth, who don't have the resources, all the little people, the workers, the 99%, it's that 99% that has to stand solid against the 1% that has all the wealth and has all the resources. It's an idyllic concept. It's beautifully expressed. It's almost romantic in its expression. So I went down to the Occupy Austin event on its first day. And with an understanding of what it was I was going to be involved in, that they have this idea. They wanted to remove corporate money from the political system, and they were demonstrating with that purpose in mind. They had a definite format which they were going to be used to conduct themselves. And let's not make any bones about it. They definitely lean to the left. They definitely have a liberal or progressive mentality. That, most of the people that are organizing this, they're not coming from the Tea Party. They're not coming from the conservative end of things. They are coming from a very socio-political, left-leaning agenda, that they would like to see the government solve problems that they consider important to all of us as a society: healthcare, education, the handling of our resources, the environment, things of that nature. That this is what they consider meaningful. Okay, so they imagine a society where the government serves the people by providing a number of different services to the people. Okay, so the government in the United States is not meant to do more than just administrate land rights and maintain a military and laws. They wanted actually to step up and do, go beyond all that. They think there are certain things that are basic human rights, which includes some of the things I just listed: healthcare, education, clean environment, and what have you. So the way their process works, and this is, again, it's a democratic process, is that everybody who's there participating, they are now representing the rest of us. Everyone who is not participant, they consider themselves the voice of those people, that if they could be there, they would also be participating in this system. But since they're not there, well, then this is the people that has to – these are the people that have to actually speak up for them. So part of this process was during the day, a number of different people were going to step up on stage to speak – about whatever their issues with the government happened to be, whatever grievances they had. And then the people, the masses, would either voice their support or voice their disdain for whatever opinion was being expressed. And to their credit, at the Occupy Austin event, even when people got up on stage and spoke about, like there was a gentleman who got up on stage, and he said that it doesn't matter whether you're conservative or Democrat, whether you're a liberal, a libertarian, progressive, none of that matters. That there's no, you can't back the government, you can't back the corporations. That's not where the solution is going to be. His solution, his stated solution, was faith in Jesus Christ. Okay, and you can imagine how that went over with this crowd. as he spoke about faith in Jesus Christ, there were people, you know, there was a guy who yelled, "Fuck Jesus," right out in the crowd, all right? And one of the moderators had to step up and say, "Hey, look, hey, we're all going to be respectful of everyone's opinion here, even if we don't agree." So most of the day was spent doing that kind of thing. And occasionally there were breaks in the solidarity that they were trying to achieve, this artificial idea that we all stand as one. Okay, they were very sincere about that need. Okay, because, and I think there's a methodology to that, this, you know, standing as one. Again, the phone number is 347-989-1371. And I see in the chat room that one of the listeners, who I expect is going to actually be here throughout the show, is having trouble logging in and logging out. I don't know if she's having trouble hearing me or if there's some other issue. But if there is an issue with the sound quality or something like that, somebody just type out and let me know. Let me know that everything sounds great, and I'll keep going while I'm waiting for that message to come from the chat room, because I think I'm being recorded right now, pretty sure. So even if you don't hear the show properly live, it'll still be in the archive. So anyways, solidarity is their thing. And so this is the mythology that they're going to be using, the solidarity concept. So throughout the day, witnessed several things. There were different organizers. There was no leaders to this. They were very insistent that there was no one person who was the leader, no one person or no group of people who spoke for the entire movement. Instead, you had organizers, you had people that were there to, you know, basically, you know, keep things going in a common direction. And at one point, people were actually getting in line to speak on stage. And I stood up and spoke on stage as different people were speaking. And I said that my reason for being down here, the question I had, and I talked about how I asked people if they knew who Santa Claus was. And as children, do they recall believing in Santa Claus? Do they recall, as children, believing in the Tooth Fairy or the Easter Bunny? And as I'm saying this, you know, one woman, you know, jumping to the punchline said, "And the American Dream." And I go, "Exactly right. And the American Dream, the American way of life. Do you all recall hearing these kinds of fairy tales when we were children?" Now, my issue was that I have children of my own. I told them that I was an artist and a veteran and a father, and that my concern is that the kinds of opportunities, the things that I had been told were true about the American dream, about the opportunities that were available to me in the United States, I'm finding were not true as an adult. And I wanted to make sure that for my children, those concepts, those ideas, were not just fairy tales. So my question to the occupation movement, to the people in our city hall, was what were they going to do to protect that dream, that ideal for my children, for the next generation? And this is the thing I was there to demand. Now, at this point, nobody's trying to solve anything. Nobody's trying to resolve shit at this point. Keep this in mind. Everybody's just voicing their grievances. There was a point where one of the organizers had a guest speaker, and she felt it was very important that this guest speaker be given a moment to speak her mind. The problem is that there were four or five other people who were already waiting in line to speak. So there was some disagreement between the two people organizing the thing. The woman who wanted the guest speaker to speak apparently felt that she should have some sway in the lineup, basically. Eventually, you know, the crowd shouted her down, and that resolved it. But you could see there's some division here. There's some division even amongst these people that are supposed to be working together, that have been working together for several weeks, you know, getting this thing organized. Another point during the whole event, these folks showed up, and keep in mind, they were trying to be nonpartisan. That was another thing they wanted to do. They wanted to make sure that they didn't want to be labeled like the Tea Party is a partisan organization. They are conservative. So they have specific values, specific things that they're focusing on. Now, the Tea Party would agree with getting corporate money out of politics. Okay? And I've been listening to talk shows all week about how, you know, that's the case, that the Tea Party is all for money being taken out of the political system, that our politicians should be part-time servants to people, just like they were at the beginning of the country when, you know, our politicians tried to get in and out of Congress as fast as possible because they had to go back home and they had crops they had to, you know, get out of the fields. They had things they had to do. So, you know, they were businessmen and everything else. They had, you know their own property to maintain. That now we have, you know, career politicians, and the Tea Party would say that that should be the case. The Occupy movement, I think, would agree with that for the most part. But, of course, the Tea Party has other values that I wouldn't agree with, and most people at this Occupy movement would agree with. Like, they're, you know, of course, pro-life for the majority of them, very Christian-oriented as far as their philosophy is concerned, their ideology is concerned. They're against gay marriage and everything else. So this is the division between the Tea Party and what I think was the Occupy movement. But there are many parallels, many overlaps. And during the speeches that were given, one gentleman spoke about that, we need to take a page out of the Tea Party's book. First of all, these people stand together, the Tea Party. The other thing they do is they, you know, when they vote, they show up to these events and they vote. So this is the thing he wanted to do. He wanted to make sure the Occupy movement also had that same sort of response, that same sort of involvement. There was a group of people, a group of five people, who showed up, and they had signs made up. The signs included a photo of FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and said that FDR governed for the people. Okay? You know, he brought in the New Deal, and he got people back to work. He helped pull the nation back up, you'd say. Okay? But he also, of course, laid the groundwork for the incentive and welfare state that we're now experiencing. They had another photo of President Obama, and they pointed out that President Obama is a politician for the corporations. And there's truth to this. The Obama administration has received more corporate donations than any presidential campaign in the existence of the United States. That Obama has accepted more money from corporate donors than any other presidential candidate ever. Okay? So these people, especially on the left, who look at Obama as the people's president, you know, they're not following the money. They're not looking at the dollars and cents of the situation. And there were a lot of people at this Occupy movement who were hailing Obama's position. They were suggesting that the reason Obama can't get things done is because there were corporate interests and conservative interests that were keeping him from doing the work of the people, basically. Other people, of course, spoke out, pointed out that no, he is just as culpable as any other politician in the system. He is just as much a politician as any other politician before him. And that's why people on the left are so disappointed in this president, because he's nothing new. He's not what he marketed himself to be. He's not the change that they thought was coming. This is not the new deal that they were expecting from this president. And these folks that showed up, they were expressing this idea. And what they did is they had pictures of Obama, and Obama had a nice little Charlie Chaplin mustache. Of course, Chaplin shared that particular look with a German dictator. And one of the folks, one of the people that were participating, took offense to this. But his argument was that he considered it inflammatory and destructive to your argument to compare any politician Adolf Hitler. Now, as he's making, you know, having this discussion with him, I'm over here and I'm listening. I'm filming and I'm doing different stuff. And I'm listening to this conversation. And it gets to a point where, you know, the difference here is that, you know, you shouldn't compare this politician, President Obama, to Adolf Hitler, because this politician did not have anything to do with the genocide of 6 million people. And I stepped up and I said, "Are you sure about that?" Simply playing the devil's advocate, basically. Are you certain about that? And the guy was kind of taken aback, but he said, you know, kind of chuckled and said, "Well, yeah, I'm pretty sure he had nothing to do with it." And I said, "Well, maybe not blatantly, maybe not as overtly as Adolf Hitler, but can you say with any certainty that during the president's administration that he's not on track to see 6 million people dead due to his policies, due to his programs?" And the guy didn't know what to say to that. He's like, well, but you still can't compare that. I mean, Adolf Hitler went after these people and that people. And I said, it doesn't matter the reason. Your point was that this politician wasn't culpable for the deaths of millions. And I would argue, I would submit that he is culpable for a large number of people's deaths. American soldiers, you know, Iraqi civilians, Iraqi soldiers, Al-Qaeda types, you know, Afghanis, Iranians, people in Libya, you know, the Egyptians, people in China and all over the world, people here in the United States, okay? There are people dying due to this person's policies. And it makes him no different, let me point out. It makes Obama no different than any other president. You know, there were deaths on Bush's hands. You know, there were deaths during Clinton's watch. There were deaths during Reagan's watch, Ford, Nixon. You know, as far back as you can go, every president in the United States has had policies, has enacted policies that have resulted in the loss of life. So that's just the nature of the game. But the people, there were some people here who didn't want to believe that about their president, who didn't want to believe that about this situation. And my intent was just to make sure that everybody understood a politician is a politician, and that this particular president is no different than any other. As we're having this discussion, there's this woman that, you know, heard me, and she was the same woman, interestingly enough, who jumped to the punchline while I was up on stage, who supported what I was saying. And now she asks, are you a libertarian? And the gentleman and I who were having this discussion, we kind of stopped, we paused, we didn't know who she was talking to. I didn't think it would be a negative thing to be a libertarian amongst these people. Okay, I don't know if I consider myself a libertarian or not. I am more aligned with that political ideology than I am any other. But so she asked if she's a libertarian, and we went on, and there was a person with the camera there kind of filming this back and forth between the two of us, and she said to the person with the camera, see, he's part of the 1%. They're going to send in infiltrators. They're going to send in people to kind of divide us and disrupt us, and he's one of them. And the person I'm talking to stopped and said, wait, what do you mean? Are you talking about me? You're saying I'm not part of the 99%? Now, bear in mind, the 99% of this Occupy movement is anyone who is not a corporate fat cat, anyone who is not using money to influence the political system other than the normal buying and selling that you do on a daily basis. She goes, no, you're part of the 99%. And I said, wait, are you saying I am part of the 1%? And she didn't answer me. And I go, no, for real. Are you saying I'm not part of the 99%? I thought all of us were part of the 99%, regardless of our political ideology. And she walked away. She didn't want to hear that argument. This is where my concern is with the Occupy movement, among other things, is that while they talk about not having any kind of political dichotomy. They don't have any kind of partisan politics. They just want to see corporate money come out of the process. The process that they offer up as an example of democracy is eventually, at some point during the day, at each of these Occupy movements, daily, different agenda points are brought up on stage. That somebody's selected to come up on stage and go, okay, we've been talking all day, and it seems like here are the issues, the major issues we're concerned about. And that particular day, it was the Federal Reserve and the environment, and there are a few other things, but the Federal Reserve was the big one. There were a lot of people that wanted to bring the end of the Federal Reserve. That's something I do agree with, because the Federal Reserve is criminal. But that these were the things that they pushed. They didn't speak on every agenda point that was offered, okay? So you had a group of people, the organizers, again, controlling what issues would or would not be heard. Then the crowd voted up or down. And they ended up deciding eventually that what they were going to do is they wanted to protest against the banks. They're at the City Hall, the symbol of politics in Austin, Texas. So they wanted to move on a bank. So they voted and they agreed that the next day they were going to march down to, I think it was Citibank, just down the street, and they were going to protest in front of Citibank for a while, okay, to show their disdain for the banks. The issue here, though, was that let's say only 70% of the crowd said that was an effective tactic. that we should all march down to Citibank. The other 30% said, no, I don't think it's a good idea, and voted it down. Well, at that point, what the issue was, what they do, the hook in all of this, is the people who were organizing this told the crowd, okay, so 70% of you have voted that we are all going to march down to the bank, and 30% of you have voted against. Well, the 30% of you who voted against, keep in mind, this is our system. This is democracy in action. You are outvoted. Therefore, in order to maintain solidarity, we all will walk, march down to the bank tomorrow. So please stand with us. Please stand as a part of this 99% thing. Please keep in mind our vision of solidarity. Even if you didn't, if you voted against the idea, you have an obligation to stand with us and march down the street, even though you disagree with it. Now, that's not the way our political system works. This is why our founding fathers said, no, we don't want a democracy. We don't want mob rule. We want a representative republic. We want the people to vote on elder statesmen. We want the people to vote on a particular people that they look upon as wiser than they are, to make the decisions, to come to certain conclusions, to make sure that their interests are taken care of. And that often may mean making some choices that the mob doesn't agree with, but that these elder statesmen think are in the best interest of their constituents regardless. So that's one of the major hampers I think I see with the occupation movement, because what this means is that every vote they have where the majority rules, well, every time the majority rules, that means the minority is disenfranchised. And what I think you'll see happening with this thing is that the minority will continue to be the same people over and over and over again as part of this movement. So, bear with me just a second here. When the when that happens, the minority is going to split away. Now, I don't know what they'll do. They won't go to the Tea Party, of course, because the values there are skewed. But they can't back the Occupy movement either. So they form now their own minority movement. And this just goes on and on and on and on. This is the breakdown. This is the fallacy of the democratic process. And you see, now we see some things going on with the Occupy movement where it's starting to get a little more interesting. The folks in Boston being arrested for, you know, having to go out to different places where they were told they shouldn't go or they couldn't go by the city. Of course, we had the thing on the Brooklyn Bridge with New York where people were arrested. They were lured. Now, this is, I felt unfair. They were lured onto the bridge by the police officers. And then once they had a significant quantity of people on the bridge, they arrested a bunch of them. So that was not right. What's interesting, I think, is that these people, and as they're complaining about things, this is kind of hypocritical. These people are starting to complain now, the members of the Occupy movement, that there are a lot of people just showing up to this thing for the free food and the free water. Okay? And they're taking these, you know, they're taking these resources from the Occupy movement and just consuming it. They're eating the free pizzas there and drinking all the water, and then the people that have been there protesting, the people that are there speaking out, well, they have nothing to eat or nothing to drink because of all these moochers, all these freeloaders. Now, this is funny, coming from a group of people who are asking for free education, who are asking for free health care, who are asking for a guaranteed paycheck regardless of whether they work or not. The people who are asking for free stuff from the people who have the resources are complaining when their own resources are taken by people who want that stuff for free. Kind of hypocritical. And this isn't the only point of hypocrisy in this particular movement. And again, I support the idea of the Occupy movement. If there weren't so much other gobbledygook surrounding it, if there wasn't such a almost, you know, blatant political agenda, you know, when they say they're not partisan, but they are, that's what I find problematic. The other thing I find problematic at its core, at its premise, is you're opposed to the system. You're opposed to these political hacks. You're opposed to these corporate fat cats. You're opposed to all these people. You're opposed to the way things are being ran. You're opposed to the way that we are being governed. And what do you do? What do you do in response? Well, you use the process that's been established for you by that system, and you are asking nicely, saying, please, the people who are fucking you to stop. The people who you're saying are evil, who are corrupt, who are they have no concern about human beings, that they have no concern about the individual, who are just too greedy to care anymore. You're saying that, but if we stand together and we say it enough, they'll wake up and they'll go, I've been so blinded by my billions of dollars that I didn't see all the human suffering around me, and I need to change all this. When you look at these people, George Soros, Nancy Pelosi, other politicians, there's a list. All these people that sit there and say, they had some clown at some meeting who asked the president, could you tax me more? Okay, and he was wealthy. He retired wealthy. He had worked for Google when it was at its inception. So, you know, he was ridiculously wealthy, and he wanted to be taxed more. The issue I have here with that is that, you know what, if you've got the money and you want to give it to the government will take it. If you've got the money and you want it to, you know, if you're Nancy Pelosi and you feel like you've got too much wealth, you're George Soros and you feel like you're not being taxed enough. Well, I mean, take a look at your tax returns. Every time you file a tax return, one of the questions they ask you is, would you like to give more money to the IRS, to the federal government? Would you like to give us more money? I put no, hell no on that every time. But these people who are sitting there saying, you know, I should be able to get more, there's nothing stopping them. There's nothing stopping them from doing it. So why don't they do it? Why don't they go ahead and just give their, you know, whatever portion of their millions that will make them feel better to the government? Set the example, damn it. The issue is not about the money. It's not about the dollars and cents. The dollars and cents, it's a screen. It's about power. And these people, you know, they want power. Money is representative of their power. So Nancy Pelosi and George Soros aren't going to be going broke fighting the social ills that they're using to distract people with. They instead are going to make sure that they hold these trinkets, hold these baubles in front of your eyes, trying to douse you. And it's the same with all politicians. When I say George Soros, Nancy Pelosi, all of them, fucking Rick Perry, the Mitt Romney, even Herman Cain, to some extent, is going to be exactly that same way. He's going to get you to focus on these other issues and not address the main problem, which is the system's failing. It's had its run and it's falling apart. It's gotten too big. It's become too corrupt. It's collapsing under its own bloat. There was a time in our country's history where federal law didn't exist unless you had a federal law man there to enforce it. And he better be badass if he's by himself. Now what you had instead were you had states, and the states had their individual laws. You had territories. And the territories had their own individual laws, and they handled their own issues themselves. Cities, towns, handled their own issues themselves. Now, when you could sit there and say, well, the population's gotten so big that we couldn't possibly manage ourselves that way anymore, I disagree. That we need to get away from a massive, centralized, standardized system of doing things. And we need to focus on smaller and smaller units of power, more and more direct control, people having responsibility of themselves and their own lives. This is the great injustice of our system. It encourages in people to irresponsibility, to to be irresponsible for their own efforts, for their own means, for themselves. The call-in number is 347-989-1371. I'm going to take a pause here in just a moment. It encourages people to not do for themselves. Instead, you should be taken care of by the government, by the system. These kids that want free college education, they want their college debt wiped out. They make a very succinct argument that, you know, following along with the American dream meant that they needed to work hard in school and qualify for college. They did that. They accomplished that. Check. They get into college, they get some scholarships and everything else, to get a little bit of money, or they join the military and they get the GI Bill or whatever it is, they get a little bit of money for college so they can get going. Check. They get into college, and while they can't work, they're given all kinds of opportunities to receive student loans and student grants, and it's a combination of two. I've been to college. I'll tell you, I know this. You have to have both. You can't survive on just grants or whatever, or you'll be working your ass off, let me tell you, and your chance of success isn't very high if that's the case. So you get in, and you use up your scholarships, you use up your funding, and you use grants and student loans to substantiate yourself so you can get your degree. Check. So now you're bought in. You're in debt, $10,000, $20,000, whatever it is, whatever your level degree is, you're in debt. But the idea was you would graduate from college with a bachelor's degree, 4 years. You get your bachelor's degree, and you're going to get out there, and you're going to get a job in whatever field you got your degree in, and that job is going to pay, starting, $20 an hour, more money than you could ever hope to spend, basically. That you don't need that much. You need an apartment. You need a car. You need to pay for your insurance and your utilities, and you need your job. You need to pay for your wardrobe so you look decent when you go to work, and you need a little fun money on the weekends. That's your life. I mean, you're a fucking college graduate. That's all you need. So, yeah, the money was going to be there for you to pay off your student loans. No problem. Problem was, you got out of college, and there weren't any jobs. You got out of college, and the corporations didn't need you anymore. Even worse, you got out of college with your bachelor's degree, and you found out that they were handing out bachelor's degrees like candy, basically. You know, every person that could juggle was getting a bachelor's degree. You know, a bachelor's degree was a new high school diploma. It used to be you couldn't succeed in life. When I grew up, you couldn't succeed in life unless you had a high school diploma. Now, if you don't have a bachelor's degree, and they're handing them out. Anyway, I mean, hell, the governor of Texas has a college education program for illegal immigrants. These immigrants, you know, they're here. They can get a college education. They can get a bachelor's degree. But then when they get out, they're just like everybody else. They can't get a job, except it's worse because they legally can't get a job. So what was the point of them getting a degree? So, again, the Occupy movement as premise, get the money, the corporate greed, the corporate money out of the system. I agree with that. What I don't agree with is trying to fix the system, trying to fix something that clearly is demonstrated it's not going to work. It's broken. It's failing. That anything you do at this point to try to resolve the issues you see with this system just perpetuates the problem. You roll in a new administration that create a new set of restrictions. You have less and less responsibility for yourself. You have fewer options as to what you can do for yourself. And down the road, you get out of high school, you're handed a work assignment, you're handed a number, here's your particular housing unit, here's your particular means of transportation, and that's your life. And that's not where I want to go. So we got about 15 minutes left before the end of the show. The phone call number again is 347-989-1371. And I pretty much railed on for the last 45 minutes about the Occupy movement and you know, what I experienced at the Occupy Austin event. October 6, 2011. It's still going on, by the way. They're still down there. They're still doing their thing. And more power to them, I guess. But you've heard my issue that they I don't think it's not effective to fight the system with the system. And if you really have an issue with the system, why try to perpetuate it? That's probably the crux of my argument for the last 45 minutes. So since I got 15 minutes left, and nobody has to call in, it's an hour of me just ranting, so not a big deal. I want to advertise a few things because, you know, we want you folks to check out what else we've got going on. I'm going to start with the Views Outbreak Edition every Sunday. 2 hours of T.C. Downey and myself discussing different issues. We've kind of touched on it here this evening. The idea of a systemless existence, meaning that not that there wouldn't be some order or some parameters to what it is you do or how you live your life, but rather that there would be you would have these microcosms. You would have your own way of doing things, and that you would gather your resources and connect with like-minded people, people that you can deal with philosophically, and ways that you can help one another, ways that you can exist without the larger system, whatever that may be. And this is something we've been talking about for weeks. Every Sunday night for 2 hours, we talk about different ideas, and we try to get people to call in to talk about their ideas, to share what they've got going on. And lately, when people have called in, it's kind of interesting because we've got our usual suspects. We've got our audience who we love and appreciate, who come from the same sort of mental background, if you will, as we do. And then you've got these people who are calling in from who knows where they come from. And it's interesting that they found our show and they picked up on it. There were a lot of people last week that were there as guests or whatever. They didn't have a login ID or whatever, what have you, and they were listening to the show. And we couldn't figure it out for a little bit. And then I remembered, oh, yeah, when I went down to the Occupy movement, I took a bunch of Ooze flyers with me. So maybe that's where it all came from, is that that those flyers got passed around a little bit. So that's kind of cool. But, yeah, these people call in, and they think that the Outbreak Edition of the Ooze is their opportunity to expound on their political issue, your political agenda, and how they're going to fix the system. And they haven't been paying attention because we're not about fixing the system. As a matter of fact, I think if it were up to us, we'd probably break it right now. So the Ooze, Outbreak Edition, tune in and share different ideas and different strategies as to how to negotiate life without the system. Check that out. And while you're checking that out, if you want to know kind of some of the philosophical, ideological background behind all that, then I would point you to eminentmind.info. No www dots on that. It's just eminentmind.info. I think there's a link to this in the description of this particular show. Eminentmind.info is where we talk about the philosophical and ideological process that TC and I are engaged in. Along with some other people now. We got Messiah Bay, Warlock Asylum of the Necronomicon tradition, or I think it's what they call themselves. Basically, he participates every once in a while, and we're always looking for more writers. We're looking for what TC refers to as sly men. And these are people that can think for themselves, who are engaged in, you know, living that systemless existence, who are talking about different ways of thinking, different ways of viewing things, different ways of addressing certain issues. And we're using these different perspectives to kind of collaborate and basically establish a philosophy, establish a set of parameters. And this is an evolving process. So if you check out eminentmind.info, read through some of that stuff, we'd love to hear your comments. And if you would like to add something to what it is we're saying, definitely submit that at eminentmind.info. We're always looking for more sly men. We're always looking for people who are willing to share their ideas. And that's what this whole thing is about, especially with the Ooze Outbreak. It's supposed to be a collaborative effort. I mean, TC and I can talk and talk and talk for 2 hours straight, or as obviously I can for an hour, at least by myself. But we're always looking for people to call in, to share their ideas, to give us some input. We just hope that they've taken a little bit of time to understand where we're coming from. Because before you tell us how you're going to save the government and save the system, you have to make sure the people you're talking to consider it worth saving. Okay, so two other things I want to plug. Creative Oddities Studios. That's www.creativeoddiesstudios.com. This is my artwork website. I do a lot of different types of artwork, engage in a lot of different creative processes, which is why we have studios, plural, instead of just studio. And of course, it's just not myself. It's T.C. Downey. It's my daughter, Vanessa Sorrell. And we're all artists, you know, or at least we pretend to be artists. And I've been doing artwork since forever, and a lot of my artwork tends to be erotic art, bondage artwork, demon girls, monsters, different things like that. I play around with a little bit of digital stuff. I play around with some airbrush stuff. I do some traditional painting every once in a while. I do tattoo artwork. That's how I make my living. Anybody who wants to know, I'm a tattoo artist. So there's a lot of tattoo artwork, whether it's flash art designs or actual tattoo work. And it's all available for you to check out at creativeyestudios.com. I also am an author. I've written a few books, and that really doesn't mean anything anymore these days. Anybody can get on Lulu and write a book. You can be self-published. Now, when I say anybody can do it, not everybody does. So, but it's definitely something. I would appreciate people checking it out. You'll find access to there to the Baphomet Codex. You'll find The Devil's Due. There's The Devil's Bible. This was written by me. This was written by a woman, Liliana Diabolik, I think. It's been a long time since I've chatted with her. She gets a little piece of money from me every month, but that's pretty much it. So there's all these different books that are available there. And it's not just about occult stuff or philosophical stuff there. There's a book on tattoo apprenticing. There's all kinds of different stuff there. And the artwork, of course, it's not just original artwork. I know original artwork can be expensive, and it kills me that, I recognize that original artwork has this value and everything else, but with Creative Studios, we try to make sure that there's a price point for everybody. There's stickers, there's T-shirts, there's skateboard decks, you know, all with this different artwork. And, of course, I take commissions as well. We all take commissions. So if you have a particular idea that you'd like to see drawn up and everything else, and you're willing to part with your funds to get us to part with our time, we're always taking commissions. So check that out, www.creativebodystudios.com. I believe that's linked in the description of this show as well. The final plug before I wrap it up is for the Satanic International Network. The Satanic International Network is the official sponsor of the Ooze. Sin is a forum for people who think differently. Initially, I believe it was for Satanists, and Satanists tend to be the majority voice in that particular forum. It's kind of like Facebook on devil steroids or whatever. It's an interesting, eclectic group of people. They all have different kinds of perspectives because Satanists definitely are not in lockstep with one another. They're probably more opposed to one another than they are opposed to anyone else. But they get together at these different forums, and every possible way you can communicate with one another on the Internet is offered in the Satanic International Network. They have a live chat room with video chats. You should see some of the things that the girls do on video chat in Sin on any given night. They have the different forums. They have blogs. They have a wall. They have all kinds of ways to post ideas and to get in conversations with different people. It's not always the most brilliant conversation because intellectualism is not a particular standard, although there are many very smart people participating there. It's more about just getting out there and expressing your ideas. So as you know, it's a public forum, any idea is going to be expressed. But amongst a group of Satanists, if you walk in there and express some bullshit, it's going to get shouted down pretty quickly. So I would recommend checking that out. If you have the testicular fortitude and the intellectual strength to deal with that kind of forum, www.satanicinternationalnetwork.com. Check all that out. Tell Zach that Jason sent you that way. So we got about 6 minutes left. My closing thoughts, and if you want to call in and say something real fast, 347-991-3371. My closing thoughts on the Occupy movement. My purpose or my feeling about the Occupy movement is that if people are going to participate, it's definitely worth throwing your weight behind by being present. But more so, first of all, so that you can kind of check out the carnival vibe that they got going on down there. I mean, I hope this Occupy Austin thing goes on forever so that it's not just something, you know, you're not just coming to the town to check out 6th Street. You go down to 2nd, down to City Hall, and check out the hippies clustered around City Hall and the Occupy movement. So So I'm hoping for that kind of thing. But I also think it's a place where you're going to run into and encounter people who want to do a little bit more than just be present and protest. You're going to run into people who have ideas about what to do outside the legitimate Occupy movement. When I was down on 6th Street, I ran into a couple people who participate in the Anonymous movement. I ran into one person who told me that he considered himself a part of the ONA. And, you know, that's all cool. And it was also, you know, kind of cool that, you know, hey, you're Jason Sorrell. That's, you know, I'm not sure how I feel about that, getting recognized. You know, you're Jason Sorrell. Yeah, I'm that guy on the Internet. That's me. But it was cool to run into some people like that. And it's an opportunity to kind of, you know, if you weren't aware of these people in your city, if you weren't aware of where they were at, it's an opportunity to meet with these people and start discussing doing more than just begging for the scraps off the table of the system, where maybe, if, you know, you can do a little bit more. I don't want to elaborate any further because this itself is a public forum and that kind of elaboration could be risky. So please check out the show this Sunday night. I pretty much have nothing more to say, and we've only got about 3 minutes left. So I'm going to go ahead and roll the outro, and I appreciate you folks checking it out. I'll be in the chat room for a few minutes, and then I'll be off to do my thing. So that's the Ooze Illumina Suggestion for October 11, 2011.
Thank you for listening to the Ooze. Opinions expressed by our guests or callers do not necessarily represent the opinions held by TC, Zach, Jason, Matt, or any other institution represented by them. If you have been offended by the production of this show, we are sorry, but this is the oldest question goes. Number one, special thanks to Dr. Rocky DeRoma for his contribution to this outro. The Ooze is a Creative Oddity Studios product and is presented by Titanic International Network as its official blog talk radio show. Why waste your time with those other guys? Guests or callers do not necessarily represent the opinions held by TC, Zach, Jason, Matt, or any other institution represented by them. If you have been offended by the production of this show, we are sorry, but this is the oldest question goes. Number one, special thanks to Dr. Rocky DeRoma for his contribution to this outro. The Ooze is a Creative Oddity Studios product and is presented by Titanic International Network as its official blog talk radio show. Why waste your time with those other guys? Guests or callers do not necessarily represent the opinions held by TC, Zach, Jason, Matt, or any other institution represented by them. If you have been offended by the production of this show, we are sorry, but this is the oldest question goes. Number one, special thanks to Dr. Rocky DeRoma for his contribution to this outro. The Ooze is a Creative Oddity Studios product and is presented by Titanic International Network as its official blog talk radio show. Why waste your time with those other guys?